You're listening to the Stain and Seal Experts Podcast, where you'll get educated, get more money, grow your business, and kick the 9-to-5. Here is your host, entrepreneur and mastermind behind the Stain and Seal Experts brand, Caleb Roth.
Hey everyone, I want to thank you for tuning in to the Stain and Seal Experts Podcast. We got a great show lined up tonight, a great guest full of information. Get your notebooks out and start writing some stuff down and listen to this thing over and over because you're going to pick up a lot from it. If this is the first time you've heard this podcast, go back and check some of the other issues out, and there's just tons of information there. Also, if you've never been to staininguniversity.com, go there right now and sign up to get in the free Facebook group. We've got close to 1,000 members in this group, and they're all staining contractors sharing knowledge. If you've got a question, you can ask it. It's probably already been asked. You can go in and search, and you can find the answer to the problems on your staining projects. And also, if you want to step it up to the next level, we've got a couple of paid Facebook groups also. We've got a pro level and then a mastermind level. It's a whole nother level of guys that are in those groups. So if that's something you're interested, it is there and it's available. Training videos are in the mastermind group, and those are starting to trickle down every day right now. So anyways, I can't do a podcast without talking about our great fence and deck stain. So we made our own fence and deck stain after, you know, having some trouble with some other brands, and we didn't get what we wanted off the shelf. So we went to the chemical engineer people, the chemist, and we had a formula devised specifically for what we're doing. We tweaked it and tweaked it and tweaked it till we got it exactly where we wanted it. And now we sell it to contractors like you. And it works very well. It's not full of solvents like some of the other brands. It's a low VOC product, but it's 100% oil-based. It's more like an old-school timber oil. Tons of color. Lasts a long time. Just a great product. It's something you can use every day, and you're not going to go home smelling like a paint factory when you're done using it. So you can check those things out at stainandsealexperts.com. You can check out the Facebook group at staininguniversity.com. And now back to our guest. We're joined tonight with Jeff Konopak from Chicagoland area. He is one of the main guys over at the Deck Medic franchise. He gets all the franchisees started, and I think they've successfully got 15 franchises going right now. And I think Jeff actually owns or has owned several franchises of his own. So he is very well versed in the stain and seal world, been doing it for over 30 years now. So just a wealth of information. If I ever have a question, I always know I can call Jeff and he will give me a straight answer. So we'll get right into it. And here he is. All right. We're joined tonight with Jeff Konopak from Deck Medic. Jeff, man, it's great to have you on the show. How are you doing?
Good, sir. Good, sir. I really enjoyed the podcast you've done in the past, and I'm excited to be part of one of them, and I wish you'd do more of them. I truly like, you know, getting and hearing more about what other people do. Sometimes when you're like we are, you know, we've been doing things a certain way for 30 years, and you think that's the way to do everything because that's the way you've done it and your company's done it for 30 years. And it's nice, you know, hearing other people and other points of view on how they do things and thinking, yeah, maybe that would work, or maybe we should incorporate something from there. So I'm glad to be part of your podcast, and, you know, certainly hope you keep doing more and more of them.
Well, that's the whole idea, is to learn, and I think everybody's taken a whole lot away from all the stuff we're doing. I know I have, so we'll get into it, man. Well, tell us, you know, introduce yourself and tell us the Deck Medic story. I know it's you've been doing this for a while, so let's hear. Tell us how it all got started.
Well, Deck Medic, you know, originally was called Deck Bright, B-R-I-G-H-T. And my partner, Mike Nestepniak, had a painting company, and he realized early back in 1990 that there was definitely that's a different business from painting. And of course, now here 30 years later, I can't tell you how many decks I've seen painters go try and do, and they paint them. They don't know how to strip them and seal them and stain them the right way, like us, the true wood professionals that I am and you are and a lot of you people listening are. So he realized early on that it's a different business, and so he started the other company, Deck Bright, from Mike's Decorating, what he used to have. And I came aboard in 2008. I had my own painting company, and, you know, it was one of those things where, you know, my wife thought I was working too much and, you know, had our second child and wanted me to, you know, come and maybe work less. So Mike and I talked over the years at the paint store, and he bought out my painting company, and I came to work for him. And after being on the painting side for a year, I took a look at some of the numbers they were doing on the deck side and said, hey, I can make some changes here and do things a little differently, a little better. So we tweaked it up, changed it up, and I went over there. And finally, in 2012, I was, to be honest with you, tired of working for somebody else. I'm more of an entrepreneur, like having my own business, doing my own thing. And we had tried to grow Deck Bright at the time with employees, but the issue with employees is they care about their check in 2 weeks. You know, whereas, you know, we're always focused on happy homeowners that come back to do their deck staining again in 2 or 3 years. And employees don't know if they're going to be here at that time. So we looked at it and we thought the best way to do this was to turn around and turn into a franchise. And so that's where I came aboard and partnered up with him on the franchising side of it. I'm both the franchisor, but I'm also have my own franchise. I've had a couple of them, sold some of them off and still have my own territories. But it's nice. I like it. You know, I like it better than painting just because of the repeat business nature of what we do. You know, I'm always seeing the same customers every 2 to 3 years and their relatives. And just before now, I did a quote for, you know, a guy that we do his deck regular, have been for years, and he has come over to look at his mom's deck. So I enjoy that relationship. You don't tend to get that as much with painting. You do a great job painting somebody's house, and you may not be back for several years. You do a fantastic job staining somebody's deck, and you're still coming back in 2 years. You know, so it's just a little bit different. And, you know, I like the fact that you can really make this eyesore look beautiful again. And the transformation that you get from taking these decks have been neglected, or, you know, somebody made the mistake of putting a solid stain on there, worst thing you can do to a deck, and then turning around and, you know, stripping it back down and showing the wood grain again and putting a nice, pretty oil-based stain on there, showing all the wood grain. So I enjoy all that part of it. And what we decided to do was, you know, turn it into a franchise just because we felt that owners are always going to care more about the business than employees. And so that's where we're at now. So, you know, I'm director of franchise development, so I'm in charge of bringing on new guys and training them and supporting them and helping them out. And right now I'm still wearing two hats because I also have my own area because, you know, that's still where the money's at. You know, I make a really good living with my own territory. And I just want to be there to kind of share that knowledge and, you know, kind of like what you do with your telecast, you know, where you go out there and you want to, you know, share the wealth of that knowledge that we've learned over 30 years and try to get more people involved in the business and at the same time teach them how to do it right so that they can make a really good living doing it. And then also, you know, you hate to, you know, sound like the guy that, you know, toot his own horn, but we really do a nice job on these decks. So we're not only helping people make a nice living, but we're also helping the homeowner out by providing them with a superior service and it's with superior products.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's I love watching the transformations, and I know you do too. So, man, I know one thing that I've noticed that kind of makes you guys a little different is you have this 5-step process. Can you tell us about that, kind of what you're doing there with your process?
Yeah, well, we're big believers, obviously, in at least for the first time we come to somebody's house, we want to take it back down to bare wood so that we're putting our product. We have our own line of oil-based stains, so we want to make sure that's what's going on in the deck. And whenever possible, we want to take it all back down to bare wood. So we've got our own line of cleaners and strippers. So we've got a stripper that we apply first. And then we very gently, low pressure, will rinse off the product on there. Now, we may do that a couple of times. That's a step that's really important because you've got to do it gently and carefully. It's still time to be very thorough, trying to get as much of the old product off as you can, saving time later on for having to sand all that off. So we're going to go through, and first thing we do is do the stripper and then rinse that away. Now, our stripper is a base, so we've got to come back with the acid, so we've got to make sure we use our brightener to neutralize the stripping agent. So then we'll wash with a brightener. I know a lot of guys like to do that downstream. That, to me, you want to do that direct, just like you do with the stripper. Our rule of thumb is if you're doing the stripper downstream, it's very light, you can get away with doing the brightener downstream. But if you apply the stripper direct, then you've got to make sure that you're using our chem cards to apply the brightener. And I prefer that anyway because that gives you that wow factor. When you do it downstream, it dilutes it so much, it just doesn't pop. But the homeowner cannot believe how beautiful those decks look when you get done with the washing with the brightener. And then our issue that we see a lot with decks here, and even more so with our decks, the franchise down in your neck of the wood down in Chattanooga or over in North Carolina, there's a lot of mold and mildew on a lot of these decks. And we believe in treating that. I think a lot of people make the mistake of they'll power wash off the surface mold and mildew. But to me, that's kind of like if you mow the grass and cut over a weed and say, hey, look, the weed's gone. Well, it's not. You know, the weed's still there. It's a plant. You go back and treat it. So we do the same thing with our Pro Mold Cleaner. That's our third wash. We do those three washes all in the same wash day, usually back to back to back. Then we leave, let it dry, you know, hopefully come back 3 or 4 days later, weather permitting. It's been a tough year for that up here in Illinois because we had the wettest May in over 200 years. But when it's completely dry, and we do have moisture meters, we go back and test to make sure it's completely dry. Then we go back and give it a good sand. You know, if it was a light deck, then we just do a light buff with our buffers and the buff pads we have. If it's kind of with a heavier strip and maybe not everything came off as much as we would like them to, we go back through and we'll sand those areas down. You got to be careful, though, with the sanders, so you cannot oversand. That's where you end up recreating that mill glaze and closing up the pores of the wood so that it won't accept the sand. So we're very careful doing that. There will be times where it's a really heavy strip and we know we got to do a lot of sanding. Well, we won't do the step two, step three of the wash, the brightening and the promo wash, until after we sand it. So we'll come back and do a couple washes with our strippers, let that dry. Then we turn around and come back and do the sanding. And then if we feel like we had to do a lot of sanding, so we close up the pores of the wood, we'll actually do the brightening, the wash with a brightener and the promo after that. I know it's an extra trip, an extra day to let everything dry out, but we don't want to have the stain sitting on the wood. I want to make sure it soaks in properly. So I need the grain of that wood, the pores really opened up nicely in order to accept it. And then the easiest part for us is our last step is step five is our staining. Now, we always double coat the flats, areas facing up, but we like to spray on our stain if at all possible. It's not too windy, if it's a big enough deck. It gets in all the nooks and crannies a little bit better. And then we go back and we back brush. You know, so we'll puddle the stain on the floors, you know, get in between the boards real well, and then back brush that in. And then when we come back for our second coat, it's a lighter coat. You're just kind of filling in the areas where the stain soaked in. You know, you only want to give the wood as much stain as it'll take. So then we come back after the second coat, spray on a light coat, and we use what's called a lamb's wool pad, wiping over it. So any excess stain that's sitting on top of a knot or an area near the house or any of the heavy areas, we can kind of wipe that up and push that into the areas that kind of need the stain a little bit more. So the floors, the steps, the top handrails get two coats. Everything else gets one good heavy coat, you know, in terms of spraying and then back brushing those in.
So what's your time period between those two coats? It's just as quick as you can do it?
I like to let it set up. It depends on the weather and the day and the size of the deck. It is wet on wet, but usually we'll come back up and, you know, we'll hang tarps over around the railings with clips, and then we'll spray the inside of the rails and back brush those, and we'll spray on the floor. We come back, take the tarps off. We'll spray the outside of the rail, spraying into the deck so that any overspray, we don't care if it's going back onto the deck. Back brush that. That gives you an hour or so letting it set up a little bit. And then we come back through and spray on a real light coat just on the floor and then kind of wipe everything off with a lamb's wool pad, making sure we're pulling up all that excess stain that's on top of the wood, not leaving behind any that didn't soak into the wood.
Uh-huh.
So it uses pretty quick. You know, I mean, we go through and we spend more time sanding decks than we do staining. Our guys are really fast when it comes to staining the decks. What takes all the time is the wash and then actually the sanding. And usually we'll break it down the times in the third. So, you know, I'll look at a job that's going to be 24 hours, man hours. So I figure there's 8 man hours on the wash, 8 man hours to sand it, and then another 8 hours to get it stained. So two or three guys will be there for, you know, 3 or 4 hours.
Yeah, and that sounds like a pretty premium service. You're doing that extra algae wash or the mildewicide wash that I don't think anybody else is really doing that I'm aware of.
Yeah, I've not seen it. And it's funny, even up here where there's several deck staining companies. I know there's some areas we go to, we have no competition. But up here in the Chicagoland, there's, you know, 5 or 6 companies that just focus on doing deck restorations. So the market's a little bit tight up here. we're 20-30% more than everybody else. We still close at over 50%. We get most of the jobs that we estimate. And a lot of people kind of taken some of the steps that we do, but for some reason, they've never bothered to take all of them. I don't understand why. You think you'd see the company that charges the most, that has too much work, that does everything, and you kind of lead into that, and they don't. And it's just a nice selling feature for us to talk about. At the same time, it's something that we really think is necessary. I mean, you can show a homeowner, look at the mold and mildew on your deck that should be treated, and they understand that. They can see that. It makes sense to them.
Oh, yeah. So it makes perfect sense.
And you know how little time it takes? Imagine just spraying on, you know, a promo cleaner. And that we will do downstream because ours comes in a concentrate, so that we can do downstream. And you can spray it on in minutes. And then two guys rinsing away, or one guy rinsing away while the other guy's putting all the equipment away back into the truck. It really doesn't take much time at all to do it, but it's a step that really tends to help. Our biggest competitor up here doesn't do that, and I can always tell, and you always see, because, you know, you get that mold and mildew on their decks, and you see it coming from underneath the stain where they've washed off the surface mold, then put a food source on top of it with their stain, and then it's just grows and becomes even worse, where if they'd taken a few more minutes of doing that step, it'd have been quicker and easier. But you know, I guess I'm glad they don't do it, because it gives us something extra to talk about when we're doing the estimates. And yeah, the people that are our customers, you know, are paying a premium price, and so we want to make sure we deliver on a premium service, you know. And we're also not afraid to take on the more difficult decks. You get a lot of decks that, you know, have couple, three or four layers of bare water-based sealer on there, which is just a crap product. And, you know, people look at that, they, well, I'm not going to strip that off, so they want to put a solid on it. So they're just exacerbating the problem, making it worse by putting even a heavier solid-based stain on top of that. Instead of spending a little bit of time just doing what you can to strip it. You know, if power washing, I tell everybody, it's not about power. You know, it's about patience. It's about taking that chemical, putting it on there, let the chemical do its work. We do a scratch test, so we'll keep applying it until it softens up enough to where we can take our, usually you guys using the wand when they're spraying it, and they'll use it and they'll scratch it. When they get down to bare wood, then they know it's soft enough for us to rinse it away. Now, we have to keep it wet. Once it dries, it's no good anymore, so we're always re-wetting it, always reapplying it, keeping it on there. But we just keep working at it until we do it. We just take our time with that strip. I'd rather a team spend an extra hour stripping a deck, then have to come back and spend 2 hours extra sanding a deck, trying to get the rest of it off. You know, it's much easier to gently power wash it off. And it looks incredible, and homeowners can't believe how nice the deck looks when we get done washing it, compared to how it looked with this peeling water-based product on it, or somebody put a painter had gone out and didn't know what they do. They're painters. They paint. They put a solid stain on it, and then it's peeling like crazy. And now we've got to go back and work even harder to try and strip those off. Sometimes on some of those, we actually pre-sand, where if it's bad enough, or somebody used that deck over product or one of those other elastomeric coatings, they're real thick, real heavy, that I can't believe anybody would sell them, much less buy them, but people do. So we go back and we take the diamond grinders, we'll actually grind off that top layer to knock it back down to a heavier medium strip, and then start our five-step process after that.
No, that makes sense. I've got a question for you. What do you do when you do these strips? If you've got a really heavy strip, what happens with all of the stuff that strips off of the deck? Do you do anything to contain that or catch it?
We try to. Like, obviously, our biggest issue is the house. Once that stuff dries back on the house, it almost glues itself. It's hard to get off. So we're always rinsing. You know, we're, you know, constantly, you know, washing for 5 minutes and rinsing the house. And we're always pre-soaking the house. Once we apply the stripper, if you'd rather put the stripper on a dry deck, then we go back before we start rinsing off the product that's on the wood. We pre-soak everything really good, and we're constantly rinsing. We've had a little bit of luck with, you know, that mesh garden stuff that they use for, like, landscapers that will put underneath pavers and the gardens that a lot of moisture, but it will keep plants. Well, we take that mesh and we can spread that around. That'll help catch it. We're a little bit leery of plastic because the problem with the plastic is that on a hot day, if you cover up all the plants with plastic, you're going to create that greenhouse effect. And you can almost do more damage with the plastic in there. So you got to be careful. You're always opening it up and letting the plants breathe, or trying to cover only one side of it. So we do the best we can. Most stuff we're blowing away from the deck and out into the grass. But I would say if we have any complaints, it's always either because we're 3 months behind and people don't like that, or the mess that the guys will make. And then we try and let the homeowners know it's a messy business, a messy process. And a lot of those decks where they've got a solid on there, we're trying to strip off, you actually want a mess. The bigger mess we make, the better job we did getting it off the deck. Now, we blow it into your grass, you go and mow the grass, it mulches up and cuts up real easily. The bigger issue is when it gets into the rocks around around the plants that are around the deck, or they have mulch around the deck, and then it takes a while for the rain to kind of break it all down and wash it down into the rocks. That's where we're trying to cover, protect it. You know, we're not worried about the grass because we blow it all the into the grass as best we can, or blow it off the house or off of a patio and out into the grass, and then let the mower take care of it.
Sure. No, that makes sense. Make common sense stuff there. So one question, you know, everybody asks this on the internet all the time, is about cleaning and bleach and all this stuff. Now, you mentioned you do your five-step process on every deck. So are you going to use that same strip on a brand new deck or on a deck that is just gray and doesn't have any kind of coating on it?
Yes, we will, especially on the brand new decks. You sometimes have to work harder on those than some old weather deck that might have an old stain on it from, you know, 5, 6, 7 years ago. You really need to open up that wood grain. So if I get out there, I see it's new. If I can still see the stamps on the wood, clear as day, and, you know, it's got that little bit of the sheen to, from the mill glaze, we go through there and use the same process. And sometimes it'll be a heavier strip on that than we will on a deck that's been stained with an old oil base. It's kind of a lighter stain, just because we want to make sure we're opening up that wood grain to accept the stain. Ours is not a film-forming product. It's got to be allowed to soak into the wood. We offer a two-season warranty. So our warranty is for all of this season, the season we're doing it, and all of next season. Well, whenever we have a warranty issue, it's always either from a brand new deck that really wasn't ready to accept the stain, and the stain kind of faded out quicker than it should have, or a really extra heavy deck where we had to do a lot of sanding and the guys recreated that mill glaze. And again, the stain didn't soak in properly like it's supposed to. So yeah, on brand new decks, we'll still go out there and do that process. Our stripper is a powder, so they can make it stronger or lighter based upon the strip level of the deck. So it is a lighter strip level. We try not to let the stripper dwell too long, because the longer it's on there, the more it'll break down the linguin of the wood and fuzz up the deck. So we want to prevent that, so it makes it a little more sanding. But we do want to do that same process on brand new decks, and even the weather decks, we want to get out there. And again, our stripper there, in that case, is trying to get rid of all the dead cell wood. We don't want to have our stain soaking in the dead cell wood, which is really just kind of laying on top of the wood. We'd rather have it on healthy wood. So we want to make sure that we're stripping off that layer of dead cell wood, get rid of that, then the brightener, and then the promo cleaner, and then finally, a few days later, a light sand and stain. So that's why we're always working, doing the five-step on no matter what our process is on the first step. Now, when we come back, it's our stain. We don't have to do all that. It's half the cost. You know, it's a light clean with our promo cleaner, key control, mold, and mildew, and then reapply a light coat of the stain, usually just on the flats, the floors, steps, top handrails. Again, wiping it off with a lamb's wool pad. A little heavier in the walking path areas, a little lighter on the sides of the decks or underneath the railings, you know, and just to maintain it as the oil dries up and fades away. It never lifts, never peels, just kind of fades away. So, you know, but that's only on our own redoing our own decks that's got our stain on it. So, yeah, we'll do the same process on weathered decks and especially on the brand new ones.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense. I think a lot of people do have problems with the brand new decks, that's for sure. And part of that answered another question we had from Aaron Andrews over in Nebraska. He was asking about that dead cell wood on cedar decks. I know we don't have cedar down here in Tennessee very much, but I know you guys are probably 90% cedar, is that right?
At least, yeah.
Yeah. So are you removing on every deck, you're removing all that UV damage, that dead cell wood, the pulp, some people call it red on top?
Yeah, we try to. That's certainly what we want to do. So we're going to make sure that we go through and you know, a fire stripper there. Again, it's a gentle clean. It's to lighter. We mix the stripper a little bit lighter. It might be quarter cup per gallon instead of half cup per gallon, or on the extra heavies, it might be a cup per gallon. So we'll mix it a little bit lighter, but we still want to make sure we're getting rid of all that dead cell wood. Get down to some fresh new wood that's going to take the stain properly and hold the stain. You know, if you get out there and don't do a good job getting rid of the dead cell wood, it gets a little bit fuzzy, so that looks a little bit ununiform when you're done staining it. And also, it tends to fail. So you want to make sure you wash off all that dead cell wood. Now, and again, you're talking about the bleach. That's where I've always been told, and maybe just because somebody told us this 30 years ago, so we ran with it, that you should never put bleach on wood. So we've never always thought that was bad. I don't know if it really is bad. I'm just telling you what we've always believed. And, you know, again, there was times when everybody believed that the world was flat, you know, and it turns out it wasn't. So, but I see on your website and others how often people wash with bleach or will apply a bleach and then it brightens it and then rinse that away. And I'm just wondering if that's really doing the thorough job you need to do, either removing the dead cell wood or also any mill glaze that's on that brand new wood, opening up that wood grain. I know it'll brighten it, and our brightener certainly does the same thing. It's an oxalic acid, but it's really meant just to neutralize the stripper more so than it is just to try and brighten the deck. It does. You get that wow effect. But, you know, I see a lot of people doing the bleach, and we don't do that, but it doesn't mean it's not right.
Well, I think you're 100% right that the bleach is bad for wood, but a lot of companies have really pushed the bleach because it's cheap and easy, and anybody can do it. But there's no doubt when you put bleach on a cedar fence or on a deck, that it damages the wood. You can see it. One thing I do notice, that you've got a new treated pine deck, that bleach does seem to do a good job of getting rid of that mill glaze, just like you have on your cedar decks. But of course, you got to get it off there pretty quick. You don't want it to sit too long, or you get that fuzz, you know?
And we get that with ours as well. That's why we come back. We love our buffers. We use the Makita buffers and then the buff pads that go on top of it. And, you know, you can sand a deck pretty quickly if you're used to doing that. And if that's all you're doing is getting rid of that raised grain. We have other companies. There used to be a company called Roof to Deck that's out of Minnesota. And they came down and tried to come into our market. And there's just too much competition. They couldn't make it go of it, so they left. But some of the guys that worked here said they didn't sand. They would just do the strip, and then they wouldn't sand anything. And I'm like, their decks look terrible. You know, it's like when you see people at the ballpark, you see how nice the lawn looks, so they've cut it two different directions, and it's got those lines in the wood. Well, the light will catch all that fuzz and make the deck look blotchy, and even a homeowner will say, hey, look, they missed some areas. It's not even. It's not uniform. And I'll say, you know, they sprayed it. They did do it uniformly, but they could have done a better job sanding it. So now we have to go back afterwards and kind of knock that down with little hand sanders and the used buffer. We usually take the old pads and use them as hand sanders. But, you know, you've got to knock that down to really make it look nice deck. And I see companies that will only do the flat, the floors and the top handrails, areas people touch. And they're doing it mainly just because they're trying to get away with the minimum they can do. Whereas we're sanding the spindles and everything. The only thing we don't sand is roughs on wood, you know, like a fence or if you got roughs on skirtboard, we won't sand that, you know, or pergolas. But our decks, we really do a nice job sanding. And then I've always got to caution the guys not to oversand because, again, we don't want to close the pores of the wood up and trying to make it look nice and uniform and get rid of that raised grain from the stripping process.
So are you sanding and buffing on some decks, or are you using those words interchangeably?
Interchangeably, but yeah, sometimes we'll do both. You know, I mean, again, the floors tend to strip easier and better. And so a lot of times we'll just take the Makita with one of our buff pads and just run over the floor quickly. You know, the guys are hands and knees. We don't like those big machines. We've tried them. The floor sanders, they don't seem to work on decks because the boards are all cupped and curled and warped, and they don't work as well. And you don't get that real good touch you got if you're on your hands and your knees and sanding it. Guys get knee pads and you sit down there, they buff out the floors. You'll get the little heavier areas in the pockets of the railings, you know, where the spindles come up and hit the cross rails underneath the top handrail. Well, that we have little sanders for that. They're hand sanders. We've got guys. Every van's got both the quarter sheet palm sander. It's got a third sheet sander. They got a half sheet sander, and they all have at least two of the Makita buffers. I'd say most of our jobs are just Makita buffers because our guys are really good at the stripping part of it. And I have the same guys that wash a deck come back and stain it. So they know that they're probably going to go back and sand that deck and stain that deck. And sanding sucks. I'm sorry. You know, it's the worst part of our job. It's probably one of the more important parts, but it's just not fun. You know, power washing, you're moving, you're doing stuff, you're standing there. It's kind of easy work. You're letting the chemicals do the work, and you're just kind of rinsing it away. You know, the staining, we spray it on a back brush, and it's low. It's easy. It's not hard work at all. The sanding, you're on your knees, you're sanding, you're wearing a mask. It's hot, you know. Nobody likes to do that. So my guys will spend a little more time on the stripping process, knowing that they're the ones that has come back a few days later to sand and stain that deck. So they take a little more care in washing it. So we're usually doing a really good job of removing any of that. I don't care what it is. And we take on all the hardest decks, you know, whether it be a solid stained deck that's, you know, 50% gone. If it's at least 50% peeling, I'm taking it all down the bare way. You know, if it's only got 10 or 20% peeling, then we may be stuck staying with a solid stain on the whole thing. But if it's any of the water-based semi-trans, those are no doubters. We take those down like nothing. And then obviously any new deck, weather deck, or if a competitor's oil-based stain, you know, those we take down very easily. So our guys are used to doing that, and so they're good at getting that, working that product off, taking their time with it, so that we don't have to do the heavy sanding later on. They'd rather just take the buffer and run over it real quick and knock down any raised grain that may have happened from the stripper that was designed to break down that coating so we can easily rinse it away. We'll also break down that lignin in the wood and cause it to fuzz up and raise that grain.
No, that makes sense. And I think a lot of guys, I get a lot of questions. We got Chad Johnson asked me today on strippers, and I think a lot of guys are thinking you apply a stripper once and wash it and that's it, and if it doesn't work, it doesn't work. It sounds like you are doing multiple strips on decks. You know, you're doing as much as you have to do to get it off there. Is that right?
Yeah, I'd say probably 90% of the time we're applying the stripper one time. And again, our guys are good at knowing how strong to make it. And keep in mind, the stronger you make it, the more likely it's going to raise the grain and cause fuzziness. So we're trying to avoid that, especially with the soft cedar decks we have up here. The harder pressure-treated pine you have down there, there's less chance of raising that grain. But with our soft cedar deck, boy, it fuzzes up like with no issue, no problem whatsoever, very quickly. So we're worried about how strong we make it, and we're also always worried about dwell time. You know, the longer it sits on when it doesn't need to, the more it raises the grain. Now, sometimes we have to allow it to dwell. So if we've got one that's really heavy, we may come through and apply the stripper, throw plastic over the deck, let it sit, let it cook for a little while, go do another job, come back, and then reapply the stripper, reactivate the stripper with our stripper, and then again, then do the power washing at that point. Other times where we'll have one that's really bad. So, and again, the stripper works better on a drier deck. It doesn't have to be dry enough like you would for stain day. We're not doing washes in the rain, but the day after when it's too wet to stain, those are our wash days. So we'll go out on and do a level of stripping, get it all knocked down, maybe take down a couple coats if there's multiple coats on there. And then we say, okay, we'll leave, go to another job, let it dry a little bit, come back, reapply it, and do another round of stripper. You know, we'd much rather strip a deck off chemically than go back and try and sand it off. You know, the guys prefer that to begin with. And, you know, you're less likely to close up all those pores of the wood by over-sanding.
No, that makes sense. So you've got this five-step process, and you've got a lot of repeat customers. Do you get them to sign up for a maintenance plan? I think that's something that's really lacking in the staining business. I don't see a lot of guys doing any kind of maintenance plans monthly or, you know, what are you doing to keep that recurring business coming in?
Not enough, to be honest with you. And we talk about it all the time. Our issue, of course, is like a lot of people in our business, there's just too much work. It's hard to justify sometimes spending more money on postcards and chasing after repeat customers. Do we need to do more? Yes, no question about it. We used to, this is pre-2008, put the price for the redeck, for the maintenance coat, on the contract. So here's your quote for this year, and here's what it's going to be for us to come back and redo the flats in 2 or 3 years. Well, what happened was in 2008, when oil spiked, We had a couple of changes in our cost for our material at that time that went up. And plus, gas prices went so much. Remember, gas gallon, you know, used to be bucks on there for gain for stain in 2006, 2007 for a gallon of gas. Everything went crazy in 08. Well, most of our homeowners that we came back to do their maintenance coat in 2009, 2010, they had their jobs stained in 06, 07, 08. Most of them understood that the price went up and we had to adjust the price, and they were understanding of it. We had those sticklers who said, nope, 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 here's the price. You gave it to me back 3 years ago. This is what it's going to be. This is what I'm going to pay. So we honored that. But we don't do that anymore. So now I kind of explain to homeowners, it's usually going to be around half the price. You know, so that job that's $2,000 this year, when we come back in 2 or 3 years for the maintenance coat, it's going to be half the price. So we'll come back and do that for that price. And it's great. The homeowners love it. I mean, prices don't usually go down after a couple of years, much less cut in half. They're thrilled with that. And we're thrilled with that because, to be honest with you, our profit per hour is greater on the maintenance coat than it was on the big five-step. On the five-stepper, there's stripping it, and then you'd be a very slow process, taking our time and brightening it and applying the pro mold and coming back and sanding it and putting two coats of stain on there. Well, we're doing our maintenance coat. We're just spraying on some pro mold cleaner, give it a light rinse, trying to even out the coating. Wait a couple of days, come back. We spray on another coat, wipe it off with a Lambsville pad, and we're out of there. You know, we're making huge – our franchise owners love it because we're making great profits on the maintenance coat. And the homeowners love it because – hell, it was half the cost it was a couple of years ago. So it's a win-win situation for everybody. And with a true oil, it never lifts, never peels. It just slowly fades away over time. And you just got to clean and reapply it. That's why we're big believers in it. You know, and making sure it's something that's a deep penetrating oil-based stain is just going to dry away. We never want to go back to any of these film-forming products like the Bare Water Sealers or any of those, because those sit on top and they lift, they peel. You try and recoat those, it looks blotchy and uneven. But if we go back and, you know, you got to strip those down every single time. Or even with our solid stain decks, you know, they're going to peel. Be honest with you, our oil-based stains, you know, our average callback is 3 years. If you put a solid on, you're probably looking at the same time frame. The difference is on the callback for the oil bake, it's a light clean, then reapply the oil. With any kind of film-forming product like the solid stains, those are lifting and peeling. So you're scraping, you're sanding, you're spot priming, you're still doing two coats on the whole thing. You're the same price you were last time, and maybe even a little bit more. So it may be more costly for a homeowner up front for us to come through and strip off the solid stains, at least on the floors that we can, and maybe we'll still do the solid on the spindles, but the air is facing up, it peel all the time. We do everything we can to try and take that back down to bare wood and apply our oil-based stain. They're going to pay more for that initially, but they will make that money up quickly on the maintenance coats as we go forward every 2 to 3 years.
For sure. No, that makes sense. Now, I hear you say this pro mold wash again. I know you can't give any trade secret, but for your average guy, if they want to start doing that mold treatment, are there any off-the-shelf products that you'd recommend that would work other than bleach?
Not that I would know of. I mean, and again, we've always been told bleach was bad for wood. I know there's a lot of guys use it to get away with it. That'd be about the only thing I can think of, and I'd go light with the bleach. You know, you definitely want to make sure you're, you know, going after the mold plant. That's why water alone doesn't do it. You know, you want to make sure you're treating that with something. You know, we've got our pro mold cleaner that's made just for our franchise system, but you get the guys that will, I don't know really what else you might use other than bleach and or maybe like wet and forget it. You know, we've got a guy up here called Mr. Fix-It who's on the radio station every Saturday morning. I listen to Mr. Fix-It, Lou Baffardini. And so he goes out there and he's a big, you know, believer in wet and forget it because it's sold at Ace. So I don't know if you guys have that down there. There might be some kind of product down there that is something that goes after the mold plant itself. It's kind of like what you do when you cut the grass. You don't just mow over the weed. You go over there with a weed killer, and it kills just the weed, not the grass around it. We've got a product that's designed to go after only the mold and mildew plant, and yet we're around everything all the time with flowers and chlamydias and all these different plants and bushes, and we get it all over everything, and it never does any damage to the plants. You know, we step on our share of plants, but none of our chemicals really do any damage to any of the plants. You know, it's more, you know, it's designed to go after only the mold plant itself.
Yeah, that makes sense. That makes sense. I'm definitely going to add that into to what we're doing down here. So what are you finding your crews? Are you running two-man crews or three? Have you found something to be – what's most productive for your setup?
It depends on where you're at. Where I'm at, my average job size is about $1,500. And so I like two-man teams. So you send two guys out for the wash. That way there's always one guy rinsing while the other guy's doing the stripping or two guys stripping. And we'll use a splitter on the power washer because, again, we're not about power. We're about just gallons of water going through and making sure we're doing a good job rinsing it. And while one guy's applying the stripper with our chem carts, there's only one wand there. The other guy's rinsing, keeping everything wet, protecting everything. And then they go back, and the same two guys will go back and do the sanding and the staining. I'm lucky that almost all my team leaders have been here 6 or 7 years, so I got a lot of guys with experience with know what they're doing, and I can trust them to go out and do it. So our average two-man van up here will do about $2,000 worth of work a day. So I can send them out on a job that's $1,700, $1,800, and that'll be it. If it's a job $1,300, then I'll turn around and send them out with another job to get done. But you go down, John Roth, our owner down at Deck Medical Lake Norman down in North Carolina, that area, he's got a lot of smaller decks. He's found that what works best for him is the guys go out one-man van. So he's got one guy that goes out and washes it, and then they go out and stain the jobs by themselves. They'll spend all day doing it, but they'll get a $1,100, $1,200 job done in a day. Corey, who's just south of you down in Chattanooga, there it's a great market for us. But everything's these giant two-story decks that are off the side of a hill. You know, it's amazing. So his average job size is over $2,000 down there. So he's got a two-man wash team, but he's got to have a three- or four-man team on the stain day because everything they do is off of ladders and planks, and the ground's always sloping away. And I tell you, it's amazing. I've been down there three or four times to help him and work on it and check on what he's doing. And it seems like every single deck's got this incredible view.
Yeah, you're, you're definitely in the foothills of the mountains there in Chattanooga. It's a beautiful city.
Oh, my God, it is, and there's just so much work down there. I'm sorry, if there's anybody who thinks about opening a business in Chattanooga, no, it's a terrible, terrible business. But he's doing great down there, and it's just a great area to look at. It's challenging. For you know, because they got a lot of rain and they got a lot of difficult jobs, but he's got to have three-man teams on the stain days and two-man teams on the wash day just because, you know, the jobs are so much larger down there than they are where I'm at or even in North Carolina. So every area is a little bit different, you know, and that's where with our franchise owners, they've got to all adjust to what's working for them, not only in the size of the teams, but also in their marketing is going to be a little bit different than what we look for in different areas. So, you know, that's where we come in, and we've been doing it for 30 years, and we haven't got 30 years in every other place. We don't have anybody in Nashville yet. So, you know, when we get down there, it's you know, kind of playing around, figuring out what works down there, and then, you know, building a business off of that and adjusting it specifically to that market.
Right. So how many franchise locations do you have now?
There's only 15 right now. We started doing franchising back in 2016, so only a couple of years ago. You know, we've been doing decks for since, you know, 1990, and like I said, we had to have a name change. Really made us mad. Back in, we started doing the whole franchising. It's ridiculous how long it takes to become one. We get authorized, get everything done, and part of that you have to own the name and the trademark and the logo that you're franchising out. Well, Rust-Oleum, you know, much bigger company, bigger lawyers, better lawyers, had a product called Deck Bright, B-R-I-T-E. We were Deck Bright, B-R-I-G-H-T at the time. And, of course, you know, they had the trademark, and they fought us on it. And we said, look, it's spelled differently. We're a service. They're a product. I mean, they're a product on the shelf at Menards that nobody buys or uses. But at the end of the day, you know, they have a lot of patents, and the trademark office sided with them. And so we had to switch. Deck Medic was available, so we went out and got the trademark on that, and you know, kept the logo the same, but had to switch out all the vehicles. It was $20,000 just to redo all the vehicles. That was kind of a pain in the butt. But to be honest with you, now all of our new franchise owners who never were Deck Bright like this name better. You know, Deck Medic kind of says better what we do, and we get a lot more calls for wood repair, surprising, than we ever did before. And that's really kind of our specialty is those old sick decks or ones that have been mistreated. Those are the ones that we really excel on. because you get these other people that will look at it and they don't even walk and do it. I see on a lot of the threads and a lot of the comments and people ask questions. They're like, oh, walk away from that one. There are easier jobs to do. You know what? There are easier jobs to do, but you know, if you're a true professional, you're willing to take on those difficult jobs. And not only that, but you know, remember, we're usually charged about half for the recoat. Well, I take a job that was an extra heavy and we're $4 or $5 a square foot. All of a sudden, my reco cost in that for half is $2 a square foot. Compared to if I'm starting off at $2 a square foot and we're half, then we're going to, you know, it's quite a bit less.
Oh, I love even the making rough more
jobs. Money. Yeah, so those really tough ones. I mean, and again, it's different because we do them all the time. So my guys are used to doing the difficult jobs. And my guys have all been here for years, so they know what they're doing. I get for a novice, they look at it, they think it can't be done. I run into the same issue with our franchise owners. They look at some of these difficult strip jobs that they've had trouble with because their guys are newer and they don't really have that experience on how to strip them properly, how to take your time with it. And so they run into some issues with it, and they don't quote it accurately. You know, we have our own estimating software that tells you what they're supposed to charge and where you got to make sure you inflate the cost, you know, escalators based upon the strip level. If they forget to do that, they're going to hurt themselves on their P&Ls and on their profit on that job to learn from it, learn the hard way. But they shy away from them. And I'm like, those are the jobs you want. Those are the jobs that really show and test your mettle and show you how good of a professional wood restoration company you are. And those are the jobs that really make you the most money because, again, we're charging an arm and a leg for them, knowing that the homeowner's going to save money down the road. We're not ripping anybody off. They're going to turn around and get that. You save that money back in the long run, and it's going to be better for the wood. We truly believe that. I see most of the wood rot I see is underneath any kind of film-forming product to put a solid stain. You know, the wood will expand and contract underneath the sun. The moisture will soak into the wood that's dry with nothing inside of it protecting it, and it either causes failure or it sits underneath there and rots out that wood. So, you know, we know that we're protecting the wood long-term. We're doing better for the homeowner long-term, you know, and we're not afraid of those hard strip jobs. So we take them on, and they're actually our better profit margins on those than we do on the ones where, like a new deck, where we're trying to, you know, quote it a little bit tighter because we know there's more people willing to bid that job, and we still want it, but we don't make our profit margins aren't as high as they are on the real extra heavy decks where we know we're the only ones willing to strip it down.
No, I agree. That's the same type of approach we take here in Nashville. Man, this podcast has been full of great information, and I know you got to go, but I got another question for you. You've got your own franchise, or you've had several, and you've started to finished 15 franchises. So you're probably the best guy in the country to ask this question to. What are the keys? What's the main things, maybe top five, whatever, what do guys need to do to be successful in the stain and seal business? What's your take on that?
I think number one is empathy. They've got to get out there and care about the customer, and they got to care about the customer long-term. They got to care about that deck long-term. You know, you get out there and you just care about what's quick and easy for you. Haven't you going to clean this water and slap a coat of solid stain on there? And I don't care what happens next year. You're not going to be successful, not long term. Short term, maybe yes, but not long term. You go out there and you work hard. You talk to the customer. You communicate with the customer. You really need to get out there and develop that relationship. That's what I love about the business is that, you know, we don't do the email quotes or the drive-by with the mailbox quotes where I only talk to the customer. We schedule appointments, meet with the homeowner, talk to them. What are they looking to get out of this? Because sometimes we'll find out that, you know what, they're planning on changing things up and redecking in a couple of years or tearing it out and doing something different, adding a pool. That might adjust what we're going to do this year. So we're always asking the three big questions, past, present, and future. You know, tell me about the past, what's been done, who's been doing it, what have they been using. Tell me about when you got to have it done. You got a party, you know, if you got it done, I'll do what I can. But, you know, unfortunately, you're calling me kind of late. We're booked out 3 months. Or tell me about the future. Let's see how long you plan on being here. So you got to be good with people. You got to be, you know, really caring and listening to them and finding out how you can take your talents and best serve that homeowner versus going out there and looking at a deck and saying, what can I do that's the easiest for me to get in and get out? You know, and the other thing I tell everybody, and we have this issue with our franchises all the time, is get in the habit of doing everything as it goes. You know, take your deposits and enter in the QuickBooks right now. Don't do it later. Keep up with your P&L report because that helps tell you how you're doing on your job estimating, how each one of your teams are performing on a daily basis, so you get to learn what teams can do pergolas and what teams can't, what teams are better with fences and what teams are bad with fences, you know, what teams are better with the extra heavies, you know, and what teams aren't. So you learn that by doing your P&Ls on every single job as they're being done. Don't wait till the end of the season. I know it's easier. I know you're busy. I get it. We're all super busy. But you know what? Get it done now. You know, keep up with QuickBooks. You know, don't wait till the end of the year to balance out your checkbook. I mean, don't count on the bank to tell you how much money you have in the bank. That's what you have your software for.
Yeah,
the bank doesn't know what checks you have out there.
Yeah, no, we did the same thing you've got. We actually called using the same company you are for that. And hiring a bookkeeper is the best thing most guys can do because you get those P&L reports every month on every job. Makes such a difference.
Yeah. So, Dave, you asked me what's the most important. You've just got to care about the workmanship, care about your reputation, and care about that customer. You know, and if you really focus on those things and not really just get, you want to make a profit, but you know what? Don't make it all about profit for now because you're going to lose out on profit for later.
Absolutely. So if guys want to go check out your website or they're interested in a franchise, where do they need to go to look you up at?
It's mydeckmedic.com, you know, MYDECKMEDIC, mydeckmedic.com. There's a franchise page on there if they want to. They can give me a call. I'm Jeff at mydeckmedic.com. You know, and even if they're not looking to do a franchise, I get it. You know, we get people all the time who think that they can't afford a franchise. And but I tell them, if you're telling me that, then you can't afford to not be in a franchise because, you know, our guys charge so much more. Our guy down in North Carolina is double the price of all the local competition and still closes at over 50%. And one of his competitors said, well, heck, I can make more money working for you than I can doing these same jobs on my own. So the franchises kind of pay for themselves with the training, the support, you know, the knowledge that we get, you know, the how our products. But I get it. And for the guys that really just don't want to do that, I'm an open book. You know, call me. I'm happy to go through and talk to you about stuff. I'm always chiming in on the chat lines about different things. We're not here to, you know, create secrets. There's plenty of work for everybody. You know, we're good friends with Timber Steel, Greg over at Timber Steel in Valparaiso. And we're always talking about different things that work and don't work. And he's helped us out. We've helped him out. We're always sharing, well, hey, we charge this much for this customer. And what'd you charge? You know, so we're always comparing everything. So there's no real competition. You know, you're happy to work with anybody. So we'd love to have more people sign on as franchise owners. But for those who just want a little tip or a little advice, give me a call. Happy to talk to you.
Absolutely. I agree. I find the biggest competition is ourself. So if we can beat ourselves, we're doing pretty good. So, well, that's it, man. I know you got an appointment. You're probably pulling in the driveway any minute. So I'll let you go. And I want to thank you for coming on. And we'll have you back again. You're an open book. So we want to take advantage of it.
I appreciate it. And hey, keep doing these, Caleb. I tell you, I've listened to every one of your podcasts at least three times.
Well,
so
I
enjoy listening to them.
Yeah, you're right. Absolutely. I've got quite a few guys lined up now, and we've just kind of had it on the back burner. We're so busy, but it's time to dig in and get these things out there.
Perfect. All right. Thank you,
sir. All right, man. Thanks.
Wow, that was such a great podcast. I really enjoy talking to Jeff every time I learn something from him. I hope you enjoyed this as well. I want to ask you, leave us a 5-star review. Share this podcast with other people that you think might be interested. If you got a friend across the country or across town who's a painting, staining, pressure washing contractor, turn them on to this. It's some good information that a lot of guys can use. And it's going to help people, and it's going to give your customers a better finished product, and it's going to keep pushing you forward in making you a better businessman or woman. So go to stainandsealexperts.com if you want to check out some of our great fence and deck stains. Got a great color choice, 16 colors. Fence stain, deck stain, got what you need there. And go to staininguniversity.com and sign up for the Facebook group. You can ask Jeff and many other guys just like Jeff questions directly right there on the Facebook group. It's a great place to go, and it will help you. So that's it, guys. Share this podcast, and we'll see you on the next one.
Thank you for listening to the CNC Seal Experts Podcast. Subscribe to this podcast, leave a review, and check out Stain and Seal Experts on your favorite social media.